Hello, everybody. It's Wednesday, May 2nd, and you're listening to the Big Planet Comics Podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
I was trying to be a professional.
Probably May 3rd when they're listening to this, though.
Or 4th.
No, it's Wednesday, May 2nd. My name's Kevin.
My name's Nick.
My name's Jared.
And we're the guys to do the Big Planet Comics Podcast. That's us.
Coming to you live from Panetta Studios.
From Panetta Studios. One Magna Beam Lane. we're here.
We're here.
Yeah. What should we tell people about this podcast?
Which number is it?
We talk about, we're your number one source for comic news and reviews.
Which number of podcast?
Oh, didn't I say it's number 43?
I can't remember.
I'm sorry.
Counting down to the 50th.
Should we talk about this? Is this really going to happen?
We're doing it for sure.
All right. Our 50th episode is going to be live.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that live at our Vienna location.
Hopefully we'll have some guest appearances, but you are also welcome to join us.
Yeah, hopefully we haven't actually made any arrangements yet, and we're not actually sure what date it'll be.
That's why I said guests, and this is all vague.
More details to come.
Yes. We'll have guesses about guests.
But so countdown to that.
Yeah, but until then, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
You can follow us on Twitter at Big Planet Comics.
You can check us out on Facebook.
Man, we're like a working like a unit tonight.
Let's do it.
Working like a unit, working like a unit. So what's going on, you guys?
Stuff.
Yep.
Going to see Avengers tomorrow? Pretty excited?
Yeah. The showing that you guys are going to is sold out.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I might still try to go. I'm going to try to get tickets to something.
There's like a bunch of midnight showings, so I'm just going to go to the one that has less people in it when I get there.
You sneak into the wrong one.
Yeah, I might be able to hook you up, Kevin.
You're going
to
be in a 3D one, but not have any glasses.
I definitely hope I don't go.
This movie's terrible.
Can you just like cover up one of your eyes?
You have to drill a new hole in your head.
I need to get some of those glasses that make 3D movies not 3D anymore.
And you guys are excited about it because you hate Jack Kirby, right?
Yeah.
No. It's because I don't respect his
legacy. He's back in there.
He is, yeah. They're putting his name on as a co-creator. I think we talked about that last week.
Stolen from Jack Kirby.
It's a special feature at the end.
They say no rights reserved.
It's
after the credits.
And then we got Free Comic Book Day coming up this Saturday.
It's gonna be the bananas.
It's gonna be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got we talk about it. We've said it so many times.
Say it again.
We've got Jorge Aguirre, writer of Giants Beware, and Jeremy Whitley, writer of Princeless, both gonna be at our Vienna location.
And the real actual Ghostbusters.
And some Ghostbusters. The actual Ghostbusters. Peter Venkman's gonna be there.
Yep.
Ray Steins?
Steins.
Yeah.
Egon Schiele?
Spengler?
Spengler. Yeah, and Ernie Hudson.
And the black guy.
So anything else going on besides preparing to go see Avengers?
Cinco de Sandra is also on Saturday night, which is a weird art fest party thing, which will have comic book readings by Jim Dugan, Dean Haspiel, and Molly Lawless.
Dino Machino?
The Dino Machino. And the DJ Pivo will be DJing that as well.
DJ Pivo.
I'm going to be drunk off tacos and tequila at that point.
You're going to get drunk off tacos?
That would be amazing.
Fermented tacos.
That's a good cart you get those from.
Yeah, so that should be fun. I am probably not going to go to that because I'm going to be tired from Free Comic
Book Day.
I'm
going to be exhausted and I'm going to be there. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, cool.
I plan on being drunk.
So those are things that are going to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
But what has happened?
What has happened?
Yes, what has happened,
like
you guys?
The cosmic sense?
Yeah, or just in general.
Oh, man. He's got me on. Oh, DC United. I saw the game last Saturday, which was awesome. Nice. It was 1-0 up when we came in late to the game and they were winning. And then the other team tied it up 1-1. Then they went up 2-1. The other team tied it up 2-2. And then they went up 3-2 and they won. It was very exciting.
Nice.
DC United are a soccer team for 99% of the people in the world.
Yes.
Jared's the 1%.
Yeah, Jared is the 1%.
The one time I'm the 1%.
Oppressing us with his soccer.
That's what I do.
I downloaded The Walking Dead game.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Did you play it?
Nope.
Oh.
But I downloaded it.
What system is it on?
It's on everything basically. Yeah.
Except for Wii, probably.
Yeah, it seems cool. I will give you guys some info about that next week.
I might play it
before you do.
Oh, no.
I'll be right back.
You'll ruin it.
You just ruined my night.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, I was pretty hyped up about this podcast, but now I'm just miserable.
Sorry.
Yeah, so... what should we do? Should we talk about some news? Or should we do some viewer mail?
Is there some news?
You want to mix it up?
Well, we have some more Before Watchmen stuff to talk about.
It's coming, kids.
But that ties into to one of our questions. You can hear me turning on my phone right here. let's see. What do we got here?
This is our Before Watchmen segment.
Yes. Yeah. We should do some music for Before Watchmen because I think this is going to happen.
Just clips from the Watchmen movie of characters screaming as they get killed.
If I can find this thing that Jared sent me.
Is there like a sound effect of the comedian getting thrown out the window to his death? We should just play that every time.
Or Dr. Manhattan becoming Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, getting annihilated into atoms.
Maybe we can find a sound effect from the Watchmen motion comic.
Did they do that by just shooting straight from the comic book and turning it into pseudo animated panels?
Yeah.
Somehow I missed that.
Yeah, that thing, motion comics kind of went away, right? They were around and now they're not around.
Because people were like, why don't I just read the comic?
I remember when they had He-Man motion comics.
What? That was the thing?
That was one of the earliest things they do. I still remember having it as a kid and turning on the animated thing and being like, awesome, He-Man. And being like, this is terrible. It was the worst.
Yeah, they had motion comics in the 60s. They were called limited animation cartoons.
Yeah, that's what it was, a limited animation thing. But yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, Clutch Cargo, where it was a person's mouth moving inside the animation. All right, so here's a tweet that we got.
Yep.
Because we're from the future or the Today Show or The View or whatever. It says, this is from Nick. What is his name?
That's a good test for you, Nick.
Nicholas Papakonstantinou.
Of course it is.
Nicholas Papakonstantinou. All right. So Nicholas Papakonstantinou says, listening to you guys talk about Before Watchmen, just wanted to remind you, Alan Moore isn't out there pleading with DC not to do Before Watchmen. People in comic fandom journalism keep asking him. I mean, he doesn't approve, but it seems like a distinction we should be making more when we discuss it. But then he says, what does FWIW mean?
For what it's worth.
For what it's worth. Yeah. Did you just figure that out or did you know that already?
I knew it, but I had to think.
For what it's worth, I like the way you discussed it, so thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks.
Less hysteria entitlement than most other places. So that's good.
That is good.
Yeah, we did a good job, you guys.
Yeah, high fives us.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting. So I went online. I was just kind of looking to see if I could find anything that Alan Moore actually had to say about Before Watchmen.
Yeah. There's stuff about Alan Moore on the internet.
There is, especially these days. All right, so should I read this whole big quote? Or
if it's a good one, read it all.
All right. Oh, this is really long. I'm just going to read the end here.
No.
He says, I hope that you wouldn't want to buy a book knowing that its author actually has complete contempt for you. I'm hoping that will be enough.
Wow.
Yeah, he said some stuff before that, basically, that if you're a reader that just wants your favorite character to be on tap forever and never really cared about the creators, then actually you're probably not the kind of reader I was looking for.
Well.
Yeah. If people want to go out and buy these Watchmen prequels, they would be doing me an enormous favor if they would just stop buying my other books.
Oh, wow. Well, considering how many other books he has out now, I think I can oblige him. He's got a new league coming out this year. So
yeah, he doesn't want those people to buy it. But you know what? They're going to anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think not to argue against Nicholas, but to me that does sound like Alan Moore basically saying hey,
yeah, now it does.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly recent quote, but people have been
maybe he just has been goaded into finally.
I think it's a little bit of both. So Jared, you were telling me something interesting about Before Watchmen, about Bergen Street Comics.
Yeah, so Bergen Street's one of our favorite stores up in Brooklyn. And
Brooklyn Zoo.
Shame on you.
And they are definitely more tilted towards the kind of independent and creator side of comics and much less towards superheroes. And apparently one of the co-owners, Tom, has come out and said that he will order Before Watchmen for subscribers who ask for it. But other than that, he will not carry it on the shelves.
Hmm. That's
controversial.
It's a thing.
It is.
Not something that we could do.
Yeah. Yeah, admittedly, he's in...
We could if we had scruples.
Yeah. But he's in New York where people can hop on the metro or subway across the river to
the nearest comic book store is
two blocks away.
Hooting and hollering right now. They're shooting guns.
They're just yee-haw.
But Bergen does, they're definitely more of an independent comic store.
Yeah.
For us to not carry a DC book would be just weird anyway. Especially one that's going to be kind of big, but I can see where they're coming from. I do think it's admirable.
Yeah,
I mean, if you feel that morally it's not the right thing to do, then and you can support it, then, you know.
I still feel like he's a giant hypocrite. Doesn't matter
what he says. Alan Moore? Yeah. Not the guy from Bergen Street. But, yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
Yeah, the same thing I said last week. Like, he's like, if you don't respect the creators, I'm like, really? You don't respect any of the creators that you use their characters, like, have gangbanging? And
yeah, and the thing he talks about having your favorite characters on tap. I mean, this was a guy, of course, who worked on Green Lantern and wrote Batman stories. Yeah. You know, it's not exactly...
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a little bit of a hypocrite.
Yeah, he's still running League with, you know, whatever character he can find.
Yeah. Whatever character's just lying around in a book somewhere. Yeah.
He's got, like, opera characters and, I don't know.
People from operas?
Yeah.
Alan Moore has no respect for operas.
No. I bet he does.
So how do you feel about that aspect of it, Jared?
Which aspect?
Of, like, Alan Moore using other people's characters.
I'm not bothered by it as much as Nick is, because for me it's still, like, they're probably a counterpoint to my argument. But my point is that, like, if, like, Steve Gerber had, you know, during the Howard the Duck controversy, had, you know, been fighting it over, and Alan Moore had written a Howard the Duck comic, I feel that's much more the situation where, like, active creator still involved in comics, his character is being used against his will.
Yeah.
Much less, like, you know, Green Lantern from back in the 40s, everyone who's created it has passed on, and they were screwed out of it back then. You know, it's different.
So do you think DC should have waited until he died?
Yes. No, I think if they had waited until he died, I think this would be much less of a controversy.
That's weird.
But wasn't there talk, like, when Alan Moore, like, at the time when Alan Moore was working on Batman? I mean, not specifically in that time period, but people were already talking about how, like, some of the original artists on Batman weren't getting enough credit, and that Bob Kane was taking all the credit, similar to the way that Stan Lee gets all the credit for the things that he and Jack Kirby co-created.
Well, he's the man.
I mean, I think people were saying, like, Bill Finger created a lot of the older Batman.
He created
stuff.
The Joker.
Yeah, Dave Gibbons doesn't seem to have much of a problem with this, I don't think. I haven't heard anything from him.
Good point. The colorist is involved.
Well, and Alan Moore sort of disavowed Dave Gibbons at some point recently. Yeah.
They had a fight over the movie for The Watchmen, or, like, the money. Like, basically, he's like, you can have all the money. I want nothing to do with the film. Just write me a note saying thank you. And Dave Gibbons never did that. Or he did, like, 3 years later. And he's like, it's a little late.
That sounds very petulant, though. Like, just say thank you. Just get on your knees.
If you have something and, like, your partner's with somebody, he's like, you can have $1 million. Just, you know, send me a thank you note. You send him a thank you note. Yeah. I'd send him too.
Also, I feel Dave Gibbons probably had a lot more to do with the creation of the characters than Alan Moore.
Not
their personality and stuff, but their look and feel and everything.
I don't know. If you ever read an Alan Moore script, it's pretty detailed.
Yeah, they're a little intense.
Yeah, they are definitely very.
I don't know. My whole thing, the basic thing about this is, like, all the stuff they put into this, they could have hired all these awesome people they've got working on before Watchmen and said, you have a creator-owned book, go, whatever you want to do.
But that's true of Batman, that's true of Spider-Man, that's true of any, you know, of anything.
Yeah.
So
I that's exactly my point. I mean, we didn't talk about this last week. This was another thing I thought of later. It's like, if you look at the European scene or Japan or something, it's like, you know, Asterix by Goscinny and Uderzo. Yeah. They have had other people help them out. They've had people do other stories for them, but it's their character.
So how do you feel about the new James Bond book that's coming out?
Which one? They've had several new James Bond
books. There's another new one coming out.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Guy, you know.
Oh, probably the same as you would feel about the Alan Moore comic that came out that had James Bond in it.
Good point. True. Good point.
All right. So, yeah, that's enough. We talked about it. Yeah. But I think people are interested in it before Watchmen. They want to
controversy.
They want to know the skinny.
Yeah.
I want DC to put out a Before League of Extraordinary Gentlemen comic. It's basically just like Alan Quartermain.
And, that would be
or like
awesome
Jekyll and Hyde comic.
Well, they had all those references to, like, the prior teams. Yeah. They could do it. That would be amazing.
Yeah, not even the prior teams. It'll just be like the actual stories that all the characters are from.
Yeah, how did the rights work with all that? When Wildstorm bought out ABC, I guess they didn't own the rights to. Do they own the rights? I mean, because they publish, like, Tom Strong and stuff like that.
Right. I mean,
and Top 10, but then Alan Moore has the rights to...
I think all those books say copyright America's Best Comics, not copyright Alan Moore and his co-creators. So I think that was... I mean, it's the rumors I've heard is that DC bought Wildstorm largely to try and steal back Alan Moore. Mm-hmm. So,
and I guess DC still has the rights to the first League books, but I was just wondering how Alan Moore maintained the rights to publish new stuff.
He probably actually figured out finally how to write... How to sign a contract.
Oh!
Well, I mean...
Yeah,
well, there's a reason he doesn't own any of his stuff. It's his fault.
That's not, like, true.
That's true.
Just hire a lawyer and figure it out. I mean, it's not that hard. You're Alan Moore. I mean, you're a pretty smart dude, right?
Next week on the We Hate Alan Moore podcast. No, I still do think Alan Moore, you know, he wrote some of the best comics ever. Yeah. But, you know, there is something to be said about that.
Get over it.
All right. So,
From Hell. He owns it.
Yeah, he owns From Hell.
There you go. That's one.
That's still about somebody who existed.
That's definitely true.
But his original character that he created.
That's true.
He's never created a character.
I don't think he ever has.
Yeah, he did.
Who?
John Constantine.
Did he create John Constantine?
He did.
Really?
I guess,
he was a Swamp Thing. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Doesn't own
there
the rights. Go.
Doesn't own the rights.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about something else.
What you got?
Because we've been talking about this for 15 minutes. All right, so we've got a question from Sam Marx,
yep.
who I believe has asked us some questions before.
He has.
Grandson of Karl Marx. He says, hello. I'm reading Warren Ellis's Excalibur Visionaries Volume 1. Oh, first, just say hello to the guy, you guys.
Hey, bro.
Hello.
Just trying to be polite. He said, I'm reading Warren Ellis's Excalibur Visionaries Volume 1 and enjoying it.
Good for you.
He's bragging a little too much for me right now. do you guys know if the other Excalibur trades, Ellis and others, are worth buying? It's been hard to find a good opinion online. I read the early Claremont Alan Davis stuff, and I thought that was really good.
Yeah, the old school, like the original Excalibur stuff.
Yeah, and that was kind of Claremont when he was still at the height of his powers.
Also, the Alan Moore, Captain Britain.
That's true.
I'd recommend that.
Yeah, but that is still, I think that's way out of print at this point. But
yeah, you can find it.
Good question.
We definitely have the Alan Davis stuff. I think it's worth checking out. I think it was Claremont was not too far off of. I mean, he was still writing X-Men, and he was writing Alpha Flight.
Yeah. Also, the Ellis stuff is like so different too. Because that's, like, I think with the stuff with, like, when Kitty Pryde is on the team and, like, what's the dude that's in Captain Britain? Well, actually, I would recommend he read Captain Britain and MI-13 if he's still can.
Oh, yeah, that stuff's great. I don't know if that's still in print, but that's written by
Paul Cornell. And it actually continues the stuff from that. It's, like, basically Excalibur.
Yeah, so that and Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah.
Like, Uncanny X-Force now.
Yeah,
has a lot of cool Excalibur stuff that was just going on, even though the art wasn't that great, Robert. Yeah. But the story is all about Excalibur, and Psylocke is in it, or Excalibur, Captain Britain.
Yeah,
so that stuff. Check out that stuff.
All of that.
And then he says, speaking of Warren Ellis, I see there's a new Stormwatch hardcover collection.
Yep.
Oh, hold on. My phone just turned off. I'm going to cut that out once I figure out how to do that. I'm a big Authority fan. I'm still talking in his voice. I like the Authority too,
tell.
But this is him that said this. And everyone says to read his run of Stormwatch. Is it worth the $30?
Yes.
Then he says they're $18 on Amazon. Thanks a lot, Sam Marx. Although I guess I didn't have to read that.
I think you had to because now I want to withdraw my hello.
I think it's worth the $30, but not the $18. Well, Jared, you've read Ellis's Stormwatch.
I have not. Stormwatch was interesting because this Ellis was brought on midway through what would become the eventual whole Stormwatch run as the new writer. He finished up that. They relaunched it as Stormwatch Volume 2 for a very short period. And with the end of that series, he basically, killed off a lot of the characters, the inconsequential ones, and some of the big ones too. And then that was relaunched with a few of the surviving characters as the Authority.
Was this the thing with aliens?
Yes, that's the best part.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm wondering if they're going to get to reprint that. I don't know who owns rights because basically the aliens from the Alien movies show up and kill everybody, which is really crazy.
Yeah, running around the Stormwatch space station. So it's literally like just one of the aliens films. A lot of the deaths happens off screen. It's very like atmospheric. It's really well done.
So no need to read it now that you know what happens.
Yeah. Yep.
But is the early Ellis stuff good?
Yes, it's very well written. It's not like super early Ellis, so it's definitely when he's like hit his stride. It does suffer from the 90s art.
Is it like Tom Rainey or something like that?
Yep, the mid-90s even.
Yeah.
So if you can handle like okay-ish, like kind of painful superhero art, it's really good story.
And it's a lot of like pouches and war paint and like ponytails and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the $30 is a little bit much, but it is oversized.
And I think it's like 12 issues or something.
Yeah, just based on how many issues are in it. I mean, it's a good story, so I recommend getting it.
But if you can find it in a smaller format where you don't have to look at the art as much, like a digest,
or
like
ideal.
Print it on a stamp.
Yeah. Just read the dialogue out loud.
But for the story, I guess you're saying go for it.
Yeah.
What about you, Nick?
I haven't read it.
Well, we're still saying you should just buy it, whatever.
It's out on hardcover now. You should check it out.
It is. It's on hardcover.
Just spend the $40.
It's on vinyl, cassette, and hardcover.
Yes.
All right, you guys ready for another question?
Oh, we got more?
We got one more.
Oh, yes.
Just one more.
I'm ready. You want
to
save it?
I don't want it to be the last one.
All right, let's do it.
All right, you want to do it? Okay. So this is from Christian Tribistone.
Hello, Christian.
Tristabone? Mm-hmm. Tribistone.
What?
What's up, Tribistone? C-Money, we call him. With Flex Mentallo being finally made available again and the recent Corto Maltese reprint disaster, it got me wondering, are there any other presently unavailable titles you'd all like to see reprinted and re-released? A better Corto Maltese notwithstanding. See you on Free Comic Book Day, Christian.
Whoa.
I'd like to see Captain Britain.
Well, no, speaking of Miracle Man.
Do it before Captain Britain.
I think Miracle Man is definitely like the very obvious one that everybody wants to see.
I never got a chance to read any of the books of magic. People seem to like that. I'd like to see that reprinted.
It's the first one not in print.
Yeah, I think the early stuff is out of print.
The Neil Gaiman one, isn't it? Charles Vest? That's crazy.
I think it might be out of print.
I think most of it's out of print. Yeah.
The interesting thing, the sequel to it, Books of Magic, was largely written by
Dylan Horrocks.
Dylan Horrocks.
And it's awful.
Hicksville. Not very good.
It's really bad. Didn't he write some superhero comics too?
He might have.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He needs to stick to doing his stuff.
Yeah. It's true.
Because Hicksville is one of the best things ever.
There's a lot more. I don't know if we all will agree on it. So what else have you got?
I know the reprints that have come out so far have not sold very well, but I would love to see the rest of Shade the Changing Man collected.
Oh, true.
It's still one of my favorite series of all time. And, I think it's very underappreciated.
Yep.
If people don't know what that is, it's a Peter Milligan series. It was a reimagining of a Steve Ditko alien character called Shade from the early 70s. Yeah.
I don't know.
And it was kind of Ditko being like, hey, Jack Kirby can do this weird crap. I'm going to do this weird crap. And but Milligan and Chris Bachalo, who was basically the artist for the whole series, like 70-something issues, kind of reimagined Shade as this alien who has this... sort of technicolor dream coat thing basically. And it kind of drives him insane. He comes to Earth and inhabits the body of a murderer who like murders this woman's family. And then they go on a road trip together.
Oh, sweet.
And it's really good.
I think I'd, God, I just had a really good one.
Orksane.
Wait, we were talking about how Marvel is putting out that hardcover that has all the Spider-Man like Marvel graphic novels or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
I'd like to see them put more of those out that collect the rest of those Marvel graphic novels, because some of them are really, really
some are
incredible.
Super weird but super good.
Yeah, like stuff like Star Slammers.
But it's definitely stuff that's never
super boxers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, there's whole like Epic Illustrated too that's all out of print now.
Yeah. Yeah, they've done a few of them. They did like God Loves Man Kills, which is a great X-Men one. And they've done some of the Spider-Man ones now.
I've got three now. Just as you're talking, keep thinking of more.
Well, just say them.
The entire work of Mobius.
Well, yeah. Mobius, for sure.
Actually, next week, Silver Surfer.
Surfer Requiem.
Next week.
I hope it has all the...
No, it's not Requiem. That's one of the newer series.
Silver Surfer, something similar to Requiem. Parable?
It might be Parable, yeah.
I don't think it's Parable. I have it over on the shelf over there somewhere.
It's called Hang 10.
Yeah.
Yes, it's called Silver Surfer Surfs Up.
Catch the wave.
I hope the new hardcover has all the stuff that was in the back of the old hardcover collection.
What was in that?
It's like an interview with Mobius about working with Stan Lee.
Wow. Yeah, that will probably blow
and like up. Interview with Stan Lee about working with Mobius.
And then a Morbius comic in the back.
And then an interview with Morbius about just like what it's like to be a vampire.
Yeah. But, let's see. I've also got Katsuhiro Otomo, who did Akira. He's got several short stories and early stuff he did that's never been in English that I know of.
And Domu needs to come back.
And Domu's out of print, and there's some other ones. But also Miyazaki, the great director, has apparently done several comics besides Nausicaa that are really short. I just found that I own one, which is a little color, like a 200-page adventure fantasy thing that looks like it's straight out of Nausicaa and in Japanese, and I want to read it in English.
Can I borrow that?
Yes. But apparently he's started a new comic right now.
Miyazaki?
Yeah.
What the dude?
I know. I'm like, what is going on? And it's in English. So there you go.
Also, what's the series by the guy who did Tick and Concrete?
God, No 5. Or
oh,
number,
No 5.
Number 5,
is
yeah,
that
yeah.
Finished?
It's like 7 volumes or something, and they only ever put 2 out here.
But is it complete? Like he finished
it? Yeah, I think he finished it, or at least he did a lot more than what's out here.
Yeah. Crazy.
So that's dumb.
I'd like to see all that.
But who knows who Taiyo Matsumoto is? It's just like, you know, I don't know.
People like us.
Yeah, people don't care.
Oh, and then like Tezuka, who's done, you know, 600, how many would you say, 500,000 pages?
I think
comics?
It was like 90,000 pages.
90,000 pages of comics.
It's just 90,000 pages.
Yeah, you know, but like I've got like, I picked up a Japanese edition of his like biography of Beethoven. I mean, just like there's, apparently did 2 of them. Yeah. Just like there's stuff like that. I'm like, this is never in English and I wish it was.
Can't remember what that damn Silver Surfer book is called. It's
Parable.
It's not Parable, is
it? Rebirth?
No.
It's something with an R.
Requiem is the one where he like gets cancer.
It's like
or whatever,
the current,
right?
One of the last series they did. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like Norn Radical.
Norn Rad.
That was in the 90s where they turned him into a black teenager with a skateboard.
Oh yeah.
Wait, really?
No, that's not true.
Oof. You never know. In the 90s, they pulled off some stuff.
So that's a lot of stuff that we would like to see in print.
Okay. More. There's a lot of stuff.
There is more.
We haven't hit all the comic strips and like all those crazy old classics you showed me on that webpage that were amazing.
Yeah, Mr. Jack. Everybody's favorite comic from the 1918s. So I think there was only one 1918, to be fair.
You sure?
Okay. Yeah, there weren't many. Anyway,
there were two, actually. BC and AD. What?
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, the Earth is 6,000 years old, so that makes sense. Mm.
Those are some good comics.
All right, so that's all of our mail.
Okay.
If you guys got mail.
Or female.
You should open it. If it's somebody else's mail, don't mess with it. You can go to jail.
Yeah. That's true.
But if you have questions for us, you can send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, mm-hmm. or you can call our podcast hotline.
Nobody's called it yet.
Which is a possibility.
We got one.
Somebody will do that sometime.
Someday.
One of these days.
I've had people say they'll call it, and they never do.
That number, 703-539-CAST. That's 703-539, whatever numbers spell the word cast.
I believe it's 2278.
I'm going to try to call that number.
You should. You should call in.
Wait, is that right? Is it 2278?
I don't know. It just says cast on here. But it's definitely 703-539-CAST.
There you go.
Yeah. So, cool. Should we do some reviews?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Mm. We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right. We thought of some more books that we wanted to see.
We've been
coming
losing
to print.
Track of stuff. What else have we got?
Now I can't even remember what they were.
THB.
Yeah, THB.
Which hopefully has been rumored to be collected over like the last 15 or 20 years at this point. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
And Blueberry, but that's another Mobius book.
Yeah.
Oh, it is Silver Surfer Parable, by the way.
Yeah. Nice. Research nice. Complete.
I looked it up on my internets.
Nice. Yeah, internets.
All right, so let's do some reviews here. Are we ready?
Ready.
There were a lot of new series this week.
It was like so many number ones.
We're not going to talk about all of them because there were like 17 number ones ridiculous. Or something this week. But
none of us could read Smallville, so.
Yeah, because none of us watch Smallville.
Yeah, but yeah, season 11 Smallville now in comics.
But yeah, the Smallville series is written by one of the show writers, so
that's plus.
Probably as good as the show.
If you like Smallville, you'll probably like it. Mm-hmm. All right, so the first thing up we have is Dial H number 1 by China Mieville,
I don't know.
And Mateus Santoluco.
Where are these names coming from?
From Argentina or something? I don't know. But yeah, so this is a new take on Dial H Trujillo, which has been reimagined a couple times. They did a Vertigo series in like the early 2000s.
Right.
But the thing I mostly know about this series is that Dwayne McDuffie was trying to make a Dial H Trujillo cartoon, mm-hmm. and they were like, nah, no. And then he was like, what if it's Ben 10? And it's like aliens. And they were like, yeah, okay. So, yeah. So what did you guys think of Dial H?
Weird.
I really liked it. I thought it was kind of it's hard to say it's the best of the new bunch of DC books, but so far,
yeah.
You mean of the second wave of DC books? Well, yeah.
I think
that's fair so far.
But I don't know. I thought it was really good. I thought it falls very well in line with like Animal Man and Swamp Thing, kind of the same tone as those. And I always like the concept of Dial H Trujillo because it lends itself to so many different possibilities.
What is the concept, Nick?
So the basic concept is that in this, like, there's this like this fat, out of shape dude who just recently had a heart attack, and his friend's telling him like you need to get back in shape. And, like he's like, and then. At the same time, his friend is, like, involved with, like, the mob or, like, criminals. And he did something to – it's not clear what he did, but the criminals are after him.
Yeah, his friend's in trouble, basically. Yeah,
they attack him, and his friend shows up, like, the fat, out-of-shape guy. And there's a phone booth nearby, and he tries to call the police, and he gets superpowers. So – he turns into a superhero, like a completely different person.
A really weird superhero.
Yeah, he turns into like Chimney Boy.
Boy Chimney,
and starts suffocating the criminals with toxic fumes and stuff.
Smoke or something.
I thought the villains were pretty cool. They're kind of your typical criminals, but they have like a really weird like boss who has some kind of alien creature trapped in his office. There are various creatures trapped in his office. And I don't know. I liked it a lot. And I liked the second hero.
I was a little iffy about it at the beginning. I thought it was all right. And then I thought I didn't like the design of Boy Chimney. It had too much of that like kind of spring-heeled Jack, steampunky kind of thing that I think is a little overdone. But then when his second version comes up, Captain Lacrimose, who is basically like his superpower is he's really good at making people depressed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And awesome. I thought once that happened, it was like it actually got really funny. Yeah. And I could kind of see the sense of humor that it has a little bit more.
Yeah. And then like it gets really weird.
It does get really weird. Really there's weird,
there's a sequence where like I was talking about where he has like a the boss is talking to him and there's like this weird guy like in like a thing. Gas mask.
But then it closes up, like there's a close up on his hands. So you could see some sort of alien or something.
Yeah. It's so weird.
And there's like a weird demon grandma.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on here that's not explained.
But it's more, you know, it's pretty focused on the guy and his friend and it's good so far.
Yeah. I thought it was a pretty good first issue. What'd you think, Jared?
I think it was so weird it kind of put me off. Like, I think that, like, this is definitely one where issue two will pull me in stronger. Like you said, is at the end it kind of hit more of a rhythm. Yeah. And there's just so much weird stuff happening that I feel like it, you know, it wasn't explained, but that's the point. But, like, yeah. I want some more explanation.
I like there's a lot of cool mysteries kind of built
right,
up.
Right, exactly. So.
And that hasn't happened in a lot of the DC relaunch books. Yeah. It's kind of pretty straightforward. This sets up like so many different things at once, and it's cool. It's fun, like, and funny.
And Chana Miéville is just a great sci-fi writer. He's written like 10 books now or something, and most of them have been really good, and all of them have been really interesting. And apparently, he's a huge fan of Dial H for Hero, so that's promising that you know he picked something he loved as opposed to some big character.
It's just such a great concept for a comic. Just
it's super.
This guy can turn into any super, but it's random. Like he turns into a random superhero every time he uses this magic phone booth.
So we'll keep an eye on this one, and then in like four issues when it's taken over by JT Kroll and Jesus Saiz.
Oh god,
you mean JT Cruel?
JT the cruelest. Yep. Yeah, but no, definitely. I think like the better of the DC books, it seems to kind of take place in its own universe, even though it's in the DC universe.
Yeah, they mentioned like Green Lantern and stuff, and
but it's not like really pertinent to the story.
I like the art a lot too. It's a little weird at first, but then as you get into it, it's pretty cool. And
he handles well all the weird stuff. Yeah. He's got like some crazy page layouts and stuff.
Yeah, I thought some of that stuff like stunk of like 90s like Spawnish
a little bit. Yeah, but mostly it's like that Chimney character.
Yeah, it's like when he shows up, there are like some pages that have those kind of like, remember when everything used to have like scratchy panel outlines and stuff?
There was a
thing like that, and I was like, oh, what is this, like a Pit comic?
Yeah, but then when like Lacrimose whatever shows up,
when Captain Lacrimose shows up, I was totally on board at that point. He's so funny. He's like the most emo looking dude, and just a super emo superhero.
It's great stuff.
I think it's worth checking out.
Yep.
All right, so next up we got Dogs of Mars soft cover. This is by a lot of people: Johnny Zito, Tony Trove, Christian Weiser, all drawn by Paul Mayberry, though.
Yep.
This was released on Comixology as digital comics. It was a 4-issue thing.
Yeah.
And so as a physical thing, they've just put it into like a little trade paperback. And I thought this was pretty awesome. I think we probably all had a few issues of it with it. But basically, the setup is people are trying to make Mars a
terraform it,
yeah, to terraform it and make it like a livable place.
Yeah.
And their power cuts off and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And it seems like there are these life forms that are living on Mars.
Yeah.
And people are getting infected, and it takes on a very like an atmosphere very similar to John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I thought it was kind of cool. Some of the storytelling was a little muddy from time to time. The whole thing is colored in a weird way. Yeah, like it's black and white, but then it's just got like a lot of red.
Yeah, because of the Mars thing.
Yeah, and so some of the panels, because these are these kind of body horror creatures that are really malformed and stuff, sometimes the action, it's a little hard to tell what's going on.
Yeah, the monsters are a little hard. It's hard to see what they're doing sometimes just because of the coloring, because they're like so weird and like there's stuff coming out of them. And
I mean, like, this should have been my favorite comic of all time. This is, you know, I love sci-fi stuff. I love crazy twists and like cool stories like this. And like, for one, almost all the characters are running around in identical spacesuits, and so a lot of the storytelling for me, it was like really hard to figure out who they were talking about. And when people start getting killed, you know, I didn't know who was getting killed half the time. But yeah, it's
That's what I told Kevin. Is like, I almost love this.
Yeah, exactly. It's so a lot of it for me. It's like, I think you're right. It's the coloring. A lot of it. It's just so much crazy stuff is happening on every page, and I'm not following the story.
Yeah, there's like a few scenes in particular where I wasn't sure. Like, I was like, did that person just die? And then I was like, how did they die? And then why do they look like that? Like, I was a little it was a little muddy. Like, I love the art. Like, I love Paul Mary, and he did a great job on
Did he draw Aqualung?
He did some Blue Estate. No, and he did...
Oh, really? Oh, man.
He did part of Rod Racer. Or no, not Rod Racer.
Rod Racer was Toby Cypress. Yeah.
He did something. He definitely did part of Blue Estate, but I feel like he did something.
So you think it is just entirely that this color palette was too muddy for
it? I think
it.
It's all the color. Oh,
yeah, man. I think sometimes the color was just so... like overbearing. I think if it was a black and white book, it would have been a little easier to follow some of the stuff.
But then
that
again, like, have you seen him do good action scenes? Because I feel like his character stuff was really good, and like the people had really cool faces. I think just when a lot of stuff was happening, it got too hectic.
Yeah,
almost.
It was a little weird.
All that being said, though, actually, I still really like this
Did
book
you?
A lot. Yeah, it's just it's a style that I like so much. Like, I love his art so much. I love the setting. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of something like Prophet in a way, or you know, or things like The Thing, or any of these kind of like. I love things where people are like trapped on space stations, like Alien.
Yeah, that's
or,
the thing. Yeah. Like, it's mine too. Like, I almost loved it. Like, I really liked it, but I wish it was just a little bit clearer.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. But I am going to buy this book because it's definitely like will fit on my shelf nicely. Still, like all the crazy space comics that I have.
I'm still going to go with disappointed for a non triple agreement for a single time.
It's the first time ever.
Yep.
Yeah, but Dogs of Mars. I'd say definitely take a look at it. Yeah, I mean,
that's
it's
true,
the kind of thing where you'll know if it's your kind of thing.
Yeah. It was interesting. I'll give it that.
Yeah, it was that. All right, so moving on to, I think we'll talk about these two books together.
What you get?
Earth 2 Number 1 by James Robinson and Nicholas Scott.
Mm-hmm.
This was
say the other book we're doing.
Yeah, we'll also talk about World's Finest, which is by Paul Levitz and George Perez, and then there are flashback sequences by Kevin Maguire. But these are the two sort of Earth 2 related books that are part of the second wave of DC stuff,
which seems kind of weird that two of their books are Earth 2 related books out of the eight.
And
out of the six.
Yeah, I think it's six.
They replaced the six canceled. Yeah. So
well, I think Ravagers is related to Earth 2 as well.
No, it's related to like
The Culling,
Wildstorm universe
or something. But I don't even know what to say about Earth 2.
Earth 2 is basically the way it was originally called JSA. Like, I remember when they first announced it.
Or JSA Earth 2, maybe?
Yeah, and then now it's just called Earth 2. And I feel like I don't understand the decision. Like, it's supposed to introduce the JSA, but the first issue was just about the Justice League and, like, their last battle or whatever.
But I think the Justice League is the JSA in this other universe, basically, right?
No, because spoiler, but they all die in this.
Well, yeah.
And that's like...
Well, do they, though?
Yeah. They all die terribly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Batman gets blown up. Yeah, I don't know.
Superman gets torn. I guess I thought some... But then, like, new people show up.
But that's... The Justice League is getting wiped out. So it makes sense that this is, like, how the Justice Society formed due to the falling of the Justice League.
Yeah, basically, the Justice League gets destroyed and the JSA is formed, which is kind of the opposite of how it was, I guess.
I thought this book was kind of a mess, and I was actually having a little bit of trouble following what was going on.
The characterizations are all over the place, guys.
Yeah, so, like, Batman is in this, and... as people have like seen, Helena Wayne is his daughter and is Robin.
Yeah,
I guess just in this one
which
issue,
is cool. Yeah.
And they have this really weird relationship that doesn't seem to be very Batman-y. Like he keeps calling her good girl, and she keeps calling him daddy, and it's like was really creeping me out.
Yeah, and he's kind of like my beautiful girl.
Yeah,
remember me.
Admittedly, like, he's dying at the time. That's my only excuse for it. Because other than that, it should have been like. You know, like in Dark Knight Returns, like good soldier. Like he would be treating it like this is, you know, I've trained someone up professionally, even though she's related to me, and you know he takes his job seriously.
But they all have like these weird. I would think that if the rest of it wasn't as weird, because like they all have this narration and it's all really bizarre. Like Superman repeats stuff a lot. Like he's like, it's our last battle here. It's our last battle.
Well, that was like the Batman stuff too. He's like good girl, good girl.
Yeah,
and it was a lot of weird stuff, and then like I don't know. So, but the basic plot is like Apocalypse is attacking.
It's exactly the plot from Justice League, except
it's on Earth 2.
They've already taken over the planet.
Yeah,
right.
And
they're losing.
And I don't know, like, there's some weird stuff. Like, Mercury shows up to tell Wonder Woman that all the gods have been killed. Yeah. And then he just, like, splits.
Yeah.
And
he's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. So I don't know. I really, but the dialogue on this was really rough for me. And Nicola Scott, whose art I loved on Secret Six.
Yeah.
I feel not like so either good. She suffered from a bad inker on this book or something, but it looks very much like a kind of really basic, like, DC House style.
Very rushed.
That's not, yeah, not very exciting.
It's very rushed. And the introduction of the JSA is not very smooth. They're on like 3 pages or something of this entire issue. And like,
and it looks like they changed a lot of stuff up. Like Jay Garrick is like a teenager
now. Yeah. And then
Jay Garrick is the original Flash.
Right. Yeah. Now. And Alan Scott, who's the original Green Lantern, is like older.
Yeah. But that's the whole point. They've been doing the new 52. It's just, yeah, like your point is like, if they wanted to do that, they should have spent more time on this issue.
Yeah.
But again, that's the same problem with Justice League number one, is like, you didn't see the Justice League till what, issue 5?
Yeah, but I feel like they could have just had the whole thing with the Justice League happen in the first, like, 5 or 6 pages, and then have the rest kind of be about the JSA and stuff. And
yeah,
I don't know. And then
it's also a little bit confusing because, at least from reading World's Finest, which we'll start talking about in a second here, this whole thing takes place 5 years ago. Which I guess puts it in keeping with the Justice League story.
Original appearance, yeah.
That's like 5 years before everything else has happened in the new 52. But it just adds like this extra layer of like complication on top of like already introducing a second universe, which has the same characters as this other universe who are going through this same storyline.
And time moves faster.
That takes place in like a different time period from where the rest of the comic is going to take place.
And it's
potentially
not like a mirror universe of Star Trek or something where like they're all evil or they all have different costumes. They look pretty much the same.
Pretty
so it's
exactly
even more confusing.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if this is where the timeline diverges, basically, is that like Apocalypse.
Well, no, because Batman already has a kid.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
And then, anyway, during the course of this, the two girls, which is Supergirl in this universe, who's Kara, who's,
and
I think, the same in the regular Earth.
And
Robin, who's Helena, who's Huntress. Eventually,
so yeah, we have
both
seen her
shoot into a portal and end up in our world and end up in World's Finest number one.
Yep. Yeah, and so
my confusion was that I read World's Finest before I read Earth 2.
Oh, did you? Yeah,
so
that,
there's
I think they
double complications.
They even kind of say in here to read Earth's
like,
Finest.
I believe I opened the comic book.
Earth's
read Earth 2 first.
But I actually thought this was a much better comic than Earth 2.
Yeah.
I felt like the storyline is basically that they've been shot into the Earth 1 universe, and they're just trying to figure out, you know, kind of their identities and who they are. And
mixed with the story that takes place now. Because, like, it starts off with, like, them in the present time, and they're having problems. And, like, Supergirl, or Power Girl, I guess, who she eventually going to be, is, like, trying to get back to Earth 2, and then they start remembering their past and how they first got there and what they were doing then.
And so the main story part is the art's by George Perez, and I think it's kind of, I think it's his art's a little bit weak in this.
Yeah.
Some of it's all right, but then there's like this part where Power Girl's costume gets blown out and it's like blown off and it's like really gross and like gratuitous, and
but
she's like these big gross boobs.
Yeah.
Like,
for the most part, I think it's pretty good. Like, the characterization's pretty good. Like, I like the relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, I thought the writing by Paul Levitz was actually pretty strong. And Paul Levitz has a pretty big history with these characters. I mean, he created Huntress.
Oh, really?
And he wrote all that Power Girl stuff. I think he might have been the first person that wrote Power Girl as well.
And he wrote the Huntress miniseries a few months ago.
I thought this book was at its best when it switched over to the flashback stuff.
Yeah, those were really good art.
And that was all drawn by Kevin Maguire, who drew Justice League International, and I can't believe it's not the Justice League.
Actually, his art doesn't look as good as it usually does either.
No, it doesn't look as good as it usually does.
But it still
looks good, especially to me when compared to the George Perez art.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I thought this was decent.
It's very straightforward. It's very much exactly what you think it's going to be. It's Huntress and Power Girl going on adventures.
Yeah.
And like, it's not, there's nothing really deep to it. I mean, there's a little bit of,
it seems to be tying into some stuff that happened in Mr. Terrific as well, you were saying?
Yeah, because I think Power Girl has already been in Mr. Terrific. She was like his girlfriend, but you didn't really know it was Power Girl until now, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like the opposite of Earth 2, but in a little too simple.
Yeah, so the one thing I kind of don't like about this, even though I did think World's Finest was a much better written book than Earth 2, is that this, to me, seems to be marking, like, with this and the Culling and a couple other things that are going on, seems to be the DC Universe kind of becoming a united front again of, like, you have to read all these books to really understand right. what's going on. I mean, to understand World's Finest, you basically have to be reading two other books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think
they heavily reference Earth 2 and Mr. Terrific.
Well, I don't think people are going to keep up with Mr. Terrific anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that the stuff that happens was in the last issue of Mr. Terrific, but now he's going to be in Earth 2 because he got shot into Earth 2.
Yeah.
Spoiler for the three people that read Mr. Terrific that haven't read the last issue yet. But yeah, so we'll see where this goes. I'll probably read Earth 2 number 2 because I feel like it'll really be Earth 2 number 1.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I feel too.
And
it's kind of like funny in its terribleness sometimes, but
yeah, it's not like Batman Odyssey level of no. hilariousness, but some of the dialogue is pretty freaking funny.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just want to see what they're doing with the rest of the characters.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that. Anyway, so that's those books.
That's more of the second wave.
All right, so moving on to a new Image series from this week. This is Epic Kill number 1 by Raphael Ienko.
Sure.
Probably wrong.
Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, so that's this. What do you guys, Jared, what do you think?
I can barely remember what happened in this one. Someone give me a recap.
So this awesome. This woman has amnesia and she finds out that she's an assassin sort of because people start trying to kill her and she finds out she could do crazy stuff like dodge bullets and kill people with her bare hands really easily. Yeah, I mean, I didn't not like this, but it's just okay. It's pretty straightforward. It feels like something I've seen a lot before, like, you know, the amnesia thing and then the just being like a highly trained assassin who doesn't remember her past.
I think in the back of it, he describes this as kind of like he just wanted to do something really fun and cool, and he kind of was just going along and doing it as it went rather than plotting it all out.
Yeah.
So I think that definitely comes across in this one. But I will agree with you in every way that it is just kind of a by-the-number sort of thing, except just her like kind of hallucinations or the reality of what's actually going on around her, like, just you'll turn a page and something awesome will happen.
Yeah, that was the one thing. One of the only things I really like.
Yeah,
you mean the samurai cool. wolves?
Yep.
Yeah, and then the part with like the shark like walking through.
Oh yeah, just swimming through the hallway. Yeah. Really weird. So it's like kind of the weird hallucinations, and like he's really good at drawing that like super like surreal stuff in a standard setting, yeah. And it really is a very effective.
And it's actually written pretty well. And yeah. The flashbacks of the past are pretty cool. I just don't think I'll read it the same way.
Yeah, it didn't really grab me at all.
Yeah,
I mean, Jared seems to have liked it, but you know, you were saying you can't even remember anything happened.
It's just like those were the parts that made it cool. The rest of it, I agree, was just kind of standard.
I even thought those parts at first were just like a little like weird. I was just kind of like, what's going on?
Well, it opens with a shark swimming down a hallway. It's yeah, like, yeah,
yeah. It just I don't know with so many good Image books coming out right now, yeah. This one just didn't do it for me. Unfortunately,
it's mostly just okay.
Yeah. That's Epic Kill number one. All right, so up next we've got Something Amazing. So here we go. This is the Fallen Word soft cover by Yoshihiro Tatsumi.
Yeah, oh boy.
Yeah, Yoshihiro Tatsumi, if you know him at all.
We talked about him a few episodes ago when we talked about all of his...
Oh, the soft cover is A Pushman and Goodbye, Abandon the Old in Tokyo. Yeah. So this is... he wrote an autobiographical book called A Drifting Life. And he wrote that when he was 75 years old.
Which was three years ago.
And then immediately after that, he wrote this. And this is Fallen Words. It's a collection of 8 stories that they call moral comedies, which I think is pretty fitting. It's based on a traditional Japanese storytelling style. Yeah, that's called Fallen Words is the style or the translation of the style.
And it'll take place in like kind of...
The Edo period in Japan. Yeah.
Like late medieval.
Yeah, and this book is hilarious.
It's so funny, man. I was just
definitely
losing my mind, just like cracking up. Yeah. It's like...
So like an example of one of the stories would be there's a guy and he's staying at an inn, and because he doesn't want the person to bug him about paying because he's broke, he convinces the owner that he's rich.
Yeah, and he doesn't care about money at all.
Yeah, and he doesn't care about money at all. It's like $1,000 to him is nothing or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's not dollars, but whatever. And... I don't want to give away the punchline of it because it's so funny, yeah. but basically he gets in over his head and is not fooling anybody.
Yeah, it's just the dry like the humor is just like the deadpan kind of delivery of some of it is so funny. Like the part with like there's one story about a guy who like becomes friends with the Grim Reaper, and he's like, oh, the god of poverty is like making me be poor or whatever. And then he's like, pretty soon I'll die, and then I'll only have the god of death to look after. And he's like, oh, Grim Reaper. And then, like, the Grim Reaper shows up, and he's like, hey, did you call me here? And he's like, no, why would I do that? And he's like, hey, how's it going, man? Like, let's be friends. And he's like, oh, why would I want to be friends with you? And then they form a partnership where the Grim Reaper is basically like, if you be my friend, I'll help you become rich, because just tell people you're a doctor, and when somebody's sick, just go to their house, and I'll, like, only you can see me, so I'll either be sitting by their head or by their feet. If I'm sitting by their head, nothing is going to happen to them. They'll be fine. If I'm going to sit by their feet, they're going to die. So just give them some tea or something and know that they're going to be all right. And then, you know, if they're going to die, just tell them nothing you could do. And so, like, he gets rich, and then something really funny happens.
Yeah, so that's the thing. He has, like, these 8 dramatic stories that are kind of really intense like that. And then you get to the end, and there's suddenly, like, switch into, like, a gag or a pun or some weird twist or something. And they're all hilarious.
Yeah, the last panel.
They're so unexpected, yeah.
Yeah, the last panels are definitely, like, the big jokes. But then even the one about the guy taking, who has to take, basically, there's this guy and he hates his kid because his kid's like a little brat.
Yeah.
And his wife makes him take his kid to the shrine. Yeah. But when he's basically just trying to get out of the house to get away from the kid. So he takes the kid and they go through a market, and basically the kid's begging him to buy candy, and he's like, I don't want to buy you any candy. He's like, oh, it's because you're poor. Like, the kid's messing with him, and like he buys the kid some candy, and he's like, and the kid's still being a brat, and he like hits him on the head, and the kid's like, buy me more candy. And he's like, why? He's like, because it fell. And he's like, where is it? I don't see it. He's like, fell in my stomach. And then he's like, hits him on the head again. I don't know. Yeah. It's just like, it's kind of hard to explain because the timing is so funny. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Tatsumi, you know, he's been doing comics for 60 years, yep, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's crazy.
But yeah, there's like another one in here about a guy who's a poor, like, vagabond basically, but he paints stuff and it comes to life during the day. And then there's another one about a guy who's has a mistress and his wife, and they both die and become evil spirits who haunt him and like get in fights with each other.
Yeah.
And they're all over the place, but they're so good.
It's just pure,
yeah,
awesome.
The stories in, like, subject matter are almost very similar to the older stuff that he did, like stuff in Pushman. But yeah, those stories are so much darker, and these stories have such a great comedic edge to them. Yeah. It sounds patronizing, but to me, it's great that a guy who's this old and has been doing comics this long can still deliver stuff of this caliber and just do, like, hilarious comics. And I think that he loves doing this stuff, and it really comes through, and you can tell that he's having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And yeah, to me, this would be, of everything that came out this week, this is my highest recommendation.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's so amazing. Definitely check it out. If you want just something different, I mean, the people that already read his stuff are going to pick this up, but just try it. Like, even if you've never read anything like this, cause it's really funny.
And especially the short stories that you can just check this out and see if you like it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's great. All right. So moving on to Fury, My War Gone. Is that what it's called? Or it's Fury Max.
Yeah.
My War Gone by Garth Ennis and Goran Parlov. Of course, they're a team that famously worked on Punisher Max together quite a bit.
Yep.
And the Barracuda miniseries, which I would say is probably most similar in style to this. But yeah, this is a story about Nick Fury during the early days of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, so Ennis has written 2 previous Fury Max series that were probably, what, 10 years ago? Or like the early days of the Max line. And this one is right when the French still control Indochina, and so Vietnam is a French colony, basically. And yet Fury has showed up, and he is basically the CIA station chief in Saigon. And this, unlike the other two, which were modern, like, you know, Fury as an old, broken-down man who's just bitter and kind of, like, you know, running things because he likes chaos. And it was a very dark take on Fury. This one is also when Fury's kind of at a low point after, you know, surviving World War II and Korea and all this. But unlike that kind of, I forget who drew those other ones. Do you guys remember who
it was? Derek Robertson.
Oh, it was Robertson. Yeah. So without the kind of, like, humorous style that of art that Robertson gives, this strips it back down to a very Punisher Max, gritty, awful realism to it that,
Did you feel like it was really gritty? I felt like it still had like a kind of lightness about it, considering how sort of politically heavy the storyline is. There's just like something kind of still fun about it. He kind of has that secret agent Fury kind of feel to him.
Right.
He's almost like a James Bond or something like that.
Okay, so the thing I'm trying to say is like the two early Fury stuff would have stuff where it's like you know, he meets this one guy who's a really good soldier, and then he meets this other guy who's a real jerk, and they're twins. You know, it's like that sort of stuff, right, that kind of goofy situational comedy stuff that Ennis would throw in a lot of his comics, and this has none of that.
Like,
this
is the like kind of stuff he was doing in like the old Punisher, like with like the Russian assassin with boobs, or like Manucci and all that stuff.
Yeah, nothing that over
there. Yeah, there's definitely nothing like that.
Yeah, that's true that there are like hints of this kind of sense of
humor.
There's
a little
bit
of that trademark Ennis like weird character that's like kind of over the top thing, where like this guy shows up and he's like a former Nazi who now works as like a legion. He's like now a legionnaire.
French Foreign Legion picked up a lot of Germans after World War II. Yeah.
That part's really funny though. Like one of the characters' reactions to that. But what I meant in the lighthearted thing is like there's like the woman operative in the comic. Right. You can tell she kind of like. Like when Fury deals with her, he's like very suave, you know. It's kind of got that like he's a guy that's in the know, and it's kind of fun, even though the subject matter is like there's a lot of really political stuff going on in this book. Like it's a pretty, I don't want to say complex. Well, it's like a complicated story.
It is, yeah,
there are a few different layers of story that are going on. One is him sort of enlisting to help people protect this area in. Is it in Vietnam or is it in... Yeah, and then... But then there's, like, a lot of political wheeling and dealing going on in the background and stuff. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I feel like a lot really of that, the war stuff is kind of the stuff that Ennis is always really good at.
Yeah, definitely.
His best stuff it's is his always, love. Like, war comics.
Yeah, and definitely if you're kind of weirded out by what's going on in the Marvel Universe with Nick Fury right now, this is, like, a classic kind of Nick Fury as, like, a old... Cold War badass guy.
I love Ennis's war comics, and this is just a war comic he did that happens to star a character that has a name from something else. It's amazing. Like this was I love the Fallen Words book that Tatsumi did, but this for me was like the most enjoyable thing I've read in so long. It was just like perfectly done, and it's perfectly what I wanted to read.
I think this definitely hits on like your kind of the stuff that you like.
Yep.
I would say it's not for the, you know, like the faint of heart. There's definitely some foul language, and you can tell things are going to get pretty bad.
It's going to go terribly. They definitely make reference to Dien Bien Phu, which is like... a French fort that gets surrounded and overrun by the Vietnamese, and they're like, oh yeah, we're surrounded, but we'll fight our way out. And I'm like, oh, that's not gonna go well.
I think things are gonna get gory pretty fast in this comic. It looks like they've got a little Hamburger Hill situation going on. All right, so speaking of war, let's talk about this comic that I just realized I forgot to read. This is G.I. Combat number 1 by J.T. Krull, Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti, Ariel Olivetti, and Dan Panosian. I'm going to guess that that's too many people for the quality of all this comic.
There are two stories in here, luckily. Okay. This is their follow-up to their Minute War series, which is one of their canceled six series they canceled already, which was their war anthology.
So they were like, let's just change the name and put dinosaurs in it.
Yeah. Correct. So this is two stories. The first one is The War That Time Forgot, which is another old classic DC title that has been relaunched.
I thought that was funny that the first issue of G.I. Combat, which is like another old series, the first issue of it is War That Time Forgot. Which is a completely different comic that DC put out.
Yeah.
It's really weird. And then, in the backups.
What was the backup one?
Unknown Soldier.
Right. So, which is another comic that stood on its own for a long time. Admittedly, these both might have appeared in
I think those might have been... Because G.I. Combat was an anthology series when it was coming out as well. And I think it might have had Unknown Soldier in it. But
Or Army at War. They had a lot of war titles in the day.
Flying Leathernecks.
But, yeah.
this is a thing.
But nonetheless, these are the two stories they chose to kick it off with. And as far as I could tell, War That Time Forgot is exactly like the original in that, but updated because it started in World War II. And I believe it was Japanese and American soldiers flying to some sort of hurricane or whatever, or magic storm or whatever, end up in a land of dinosaurs, yet running around with their machine guns and Zero planes and stuff.
Yeah, basically they end up on a Pacific island where dinosaurs still exist.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this current one is, set in North Korea.
Look at me. I didn't read it.
Oh, right. Sorry. So this one's North Korea. There's like a weird thing on it. And so basically they send in like a special ops team to go figure out what's happening. And they fly into this weird area and find themselves in a land full of dinosaurs where there are North Korean tanks running gun battles with Triceratops.
Leave it to our boy JT Krull to take that concept and make it really boring.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't read this, but JT Krull is to me a humorless, over the top, gritty nonsense writer. He's like my least favorite writer working in comics right now. Well, so I mean, what did he do with the story?
The story was okay. The art was good. Yeah.
Basically some guys fought some dinosaurs, and then they were like, well, those dinosaurs? And they're like, hey, look, more dinosaurs, and then it ended.
Yeah.
It was like...
you know, it's the intro thing. I thought the art was really good on that one, though.
Yeah, that's all right.
Was that Olivetti?
Yeah.
He's the okay. Unknown Soldier, though, one? Like, that was that worse. Was, yeah. No,
oh, that but was, that was Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti?
Yeah.
Who can do good stuff with kind of, like, loner characters like that, like Jonah Hex or something.
Yeah, like, Unknown Soldier is such a cool concept. He's another World War II character that basically in the originals would run around with bandages on his face and nobody knew who he was, and he was a master of disguise.
Speaking of good Ennis comics.
I guess I didn't really hate it that much.
I was disappointed.
It's all right. It's just not, I don't know.
So it was, yeah, so
like I was like, I'm never going to read this again.
Yeah, so taking the original concept instead, in this one, he's like, he has no memory, and this is basically like the origin of the Unknown Soldier, and so it's like he's on a mission in Afghanistan or something and gets horribly hurt and his face is burned
and then
up.
Kills like a bunch of people, and then somebody's like, we want to use you as a weapon, and he's like, and then it ends.
Yeah, so again, you're kind of like, eh.
Yeah, I mean, like I didn't read this, so I really shouldn't have an opinion on it. But
give us
but
an opinion.
But if you look at like what DC did with something like Haunted Tank, you know, granted it was a Vertigo series, but that you know they made it. Does this tie into the regular DC universe at all?
Not so far,
not yet. No.
Yeah, so I mean, probably it doesn't. So basically, you could call it. You know, it could be whatever story they wanted it to be.
True.
And if you look at what they did with Haunted Tank a couple years ago,
or Unknown Soldier, another Vertigo book a couple years ago,
you know, it's I feel like so much of their in-universe books, especially kind of the lower tier books like this, just don't tend to have a lot of personality, unfortunately.
Yeah. And why would you cancel a book that's a war anthology written by J.T. Krull and then put out a new war anthology written by J.T. Krull?
Because it's probably got dinosaurs in it.
Seems counterintuitive.
Probably the same reason that they would give Rob Liefeld any creator input
writing
whatsoever.
Like four
or like
books
four books. Yeah.
Yeah,
it'll be okay, Nick.
Nick's like shaking his head in sadness over here.
All right, so we're going to move off of that.
Yep.
SMH.
And we're going to move
next
to
up,
something
next
else.
Up.
Yeah. All right, so this is Mind the Gap number one.
Yep.
This is by Jim McCann, who wrote some Hawkeye Mockingbird comics and some other stuff. And this is drawn by Rodin Escejo, who's the cover artist for Morning Glories.
Yeah. Aha. I was like, this guy's a good artist.
Yeah, when it first opened, I was like, this looks a lot like Morning Glories.
And then, but it doesn't. It just looks like the cover of Morning Glories. Yeah, so this was a pretty interesting story.
Another double-length issue?
Yeah, I think it was, like, similar to Saga number one, it's like a regularly priced book that I think is probably about 48 pages.
Yeah.
But basically, it's about this girl, Ellie, or Ellis, and she is attacked and is put into a coma. And so the basic setup is it's kind of a mystery story. They introduce all these characters who could potentially have motive to do this.
And in fact, at the end of this long issue, they say, you have seen the person who attacked her already in this comic.
Which I think was a very cool thing that had me even more intrigued than I already was. I already thought it was a good comic.
Yeah.
So, but the second layer of this is that while she's in her coma state, she enters into this sort of, like, I would say like an astral plane, maybe, where she's communicating with other people in comas who seem to be aware of some of her situation.
Yeah.
There seems to be some... a lot of secretive stuff going on.
Yeah, there's
and that these people are sort of part of a group of people that are somehow connected to each other. Some of them are family, but then there are definitely
they all
some
have, like,
characters.
Issues and backgrounds and twists and connections.
Yeah. I thought this was really, really good.
I loved it. I thought it was really cool. And when she awakes in this weird other, you know, projected out of her body and sees herself lying in this coma in this hospital, there is a person there waiting for her. So beyond this, you know, that there are other ghosts or projection or whatever wandering around, there's also a person or thing that knows about her and is kind of trying to be her guide to this spirit world.
Yeah. Let's not give away the end of this book. But
oh, no.
Just while we're talking about it.
Yeah.
It's easy to do sometimes.
One of the kind of,
they're like, it's so good. Let me tell you what happened.
That was one of those things where I was like, oh, there's the hook.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I was already hooked.
Yeah. Yeah. There's more hook.
Yeah. There are characters that already in this first issue that seem like they're kind of on one side of this and end up being on the other side of it. And
it's much like Dial H it's like there's a lot of like little mysteries built here and there. Like there's like the guy who killed her or guy or girl who killed her, and they're up to something and they're being hired by somebody else, and there's like plans within plans, and there's like so many mysteries and little things built up But and they're at the doing, same time, it's like focused and just.
And they're doing little, they're like little clues in there that are kind of, you know, eliminate certain people as potential suspects.
Didn't they have
stuff?
In the back like a little thing about how like there's a time clock shown in every scene so you know like how quickly things are happening and when people could have done something.
Or like
and,
where they are compared to what's. Yeah, it's yeah.
It's very well thought
very
out.
Well done.
It's very well thought out. And it's a double size issue for, is it $2.99?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's double like, size issue for $2.99.
Much like Saga.
Image. And America's Got Powers. America's Got Powers.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those books like where in a few weeks, everybody's going to be looking for it. Nobody's going to have any copies of it. You know, like Thief of Thieves or like Saga.
Morning Glory.
I'm going to buy all the number ones.
And then sell them on eBay in a month.
Do it.
Yeah, definitely check this out. Yeah, like if you like comics,
yeah,
it's just a really well-done story that is
awesome.
Yeah, and done in a way that really works in comics, I feel like. They do a lot of things in this book that are very cool.
It's a great mystery.
Yeah, a great mystery. And yeah, I'm really intrigued. I'm really excited to read the next issue of this.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so that's Mind the Gap. Next up, we have the most depressing book of the week. This is The Shooter's Hardcover by Eric Troutman, Brandon Jerwa, and art by Steve Lieber.
This book had me in stitches.
Did have you in stitches?
Well, I slipped my wrist sometimes.
So Shooter, the all basic right. plot.
Yeah, so this is...
This book is called Shooters, and I thought there'd be more Jägermeister in it. That's all I wanted to say.
There's a quote from Lil Jon on the back.
Yeah.
All right, Jared, why don't you tell people what Shooters is about?
All right, so this is originally set. The opening bit is the main character standing in some sort of ruined area, pointing a gun at a man kneeling on the ground about to shoot him in the back of the head. So, frame. Then it flashes back to his tour with the army in Iraq, where basically he is involved in a friendly fire accident where everyone in his entire squad is killed and he's horribly, horribly hurt. He's then shipped back to a medical base in Germany where he tries to recuperate and is basically unable to walk. So that's the start of the story. And like the thing that I found most interesting about this is that I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. And like I could tell you more about what happens in this story. But for me, that journey of where he's going and like he's got, you know, he's basically separated from his wife and he has a young daughter who doesn't really know what's going on. And just the fact that he's more able to get in touch with them now that he's no longer on these missions and, you know, how much of the military life was kind of drawing them apart to cause the separation in the first part. Like, I just found it fascinating to follow this guy. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen and where it was going. And Lieber's art is just so good at drawing, like, these kind of, like, emotional faces of this terrible trauma and all the changes this guy's life has gone through. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting. It reminded me a lot of... it's kind of a subject matter that I think has been covered a good bit in movies and stuff recently.
Right.
It reminded me a lot of The Hurt Locker. True. Like, kind of about this guy... not being able to integrate back into regular life. Yeah. There's also a movie called The Return that came out recently with Linda Cardellini that's about the same thing. Yeah. And but then this book kind of takes a little bit of a left turn towards the end and goes in a different direction. And that's the kind of thing, the part that you said.
Like,
it's like a big, such a big part
is,
of the journey that you kind of don't want to talk about it too much.
There's a lot of commentary on war and the effects on, you know, human... I don't know. I liked it. At the same time, maybe I was in the mood for it at the time.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh,
it's a heavy book.
It is definitely a downer.
And it's a little bit overwritten. There's just a little.
I do think, I think some of the internal monologue is a little bit overwritten.
Yeah, there's a few pages where there was just like too much text. And like, there was like, you couldn't see the art because it was just like text.
But as much of it's kind of a story about this guy, it's also about like war profiteering and some other aspects and kind of there's a bit of like a Few Good Men kind of storyline in there where you know the government is maybe covering something up. And I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, it's weird because to me it's not a very dramatic story.
No,
but it's
like compelling. Like there's not drama in it, but it's like this guy's journey is
very definitely drama.
Yeah, there's definitely drama in it, but it was like. I don't know. I thought it was good, but I didn't think it was great.
Yeah.
But
definitely if you are interested in anything military, this is like your book right here, and it's like the most well written. Like,
yeah, that being said, I think it's probably the best graphic novel about like modern military and like what it is to be a soldier and stuff.
I think that was a lot of it. It was just like it was the side of life that I'd never really seen, even in movies in a lot of ways. Especially because it dealt so much with him, like trying to go back home.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe it's 17.
I've just seen a couple movies recently that kind of. Like The Hurt Locker is definitely about that.
The Hurt Locker is less about that and more about him over there, and this is a lot more about him back.
It's definitely really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's definitely good. It's, yeah. I don't want to say it's not good.
No.
I just want to say I do have a few caveats.
Sure. I will give you those caveats, and yeah. I agree with you. Yeah.
So that's Shooters. And, yeah, Vertigo original graphic novels are almost always pretty interesting. Yeah. All right. Moving on. We've got... We still have quite a, like three more things.
Let's do it.
This is a long podcast. All right, next up, we got The Spider number one by David Liss and Colton Worley. The Spider, if you don't know who the Spider is the Shadow. except he has spider. He carves spiders into people.
No, that's the Phantom.
No, he carves Billy Zane's. He gives people Billy Zane tattoos.
It really is a lot like the Shadow that we talked about.
It is.
A week ago, 2 weeks ago.
It's another pulp.
He's a pulp hero.
Vigilante.
Yeah, like fedora, guns blazing.
Yeah, and people kind of know that he's the Spider. Like he's like a detective, and people kind of know that he's a Spider. But
yeah, it's almost like Daredevil in that aspect of like everybody knows Matt Murdock is Daredevil, but like nobody can prove it.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it basically, they take the Spider and kind of update him a little bit in... They make him...
He's a modern... Like, he's got a modern background, military stuff. But other than that, it seems like this is a 1930s setting. It's really weird. Like, he's got all the tech and, like, the modern stuff. Exactly. That's my point. But everything else is, like...
Halfway through.
The look of the clothes and, like, the way people talk. Even, you know, it's just, like... It seems like a 1930s noir thriller thing.
But I think it also takes a lot of influence from, like... Like, the kind of post-Dark Knight Returns, like, gritty superhero thing. Like, he kills...
Oh, he kills people right away.
Without... Yeah, like, he...
He's not teaching them a lesson. He's just killing them.
Yeah, and it's kind of... I mean, he's definitely, like, more in the vein of, like, Rorschach or something like
that.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, where he's definitely fighting, like, crazy supervillains, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
They
and
do,
so,
like, a cool rundown of some bad guys he's already defeated.
Yeah, and that's what kind of reminds me of The Shadow. I mean, it's very similar to The Shadow. But that being said, I mean, I'm not a, you know... When I say gritty and stuff like that, that's usually kind of like pejorative. But I think it was a good book. It was
It
was kind of well delivered. I thought the dialogue was pretty solid. David Liss is good at writing this kind of stuff. Yeah. I mean, he wrote the Black Panther kind of noirish Black Panther stuff from that went over the last couple years or year.
It's very good, interesting like crime superhero stuff. I don't know about the art. I'm like 50-50 on the art.
I thought the art, there were a couple good page layouts. I thought his faces and some of the anatomy was like just a little like...
It looked a little photo-y.
It looks a little photo-y
sometimes.
I thought this
felt like photo stuff, but good photo. It wasn't like...
It's not like the worst Alex Maleev.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's not like Stephen King's N or like... what's that? Scarlet.
Yeah.
It's not that egregious. Bad. But then sometimes I feel like maybe it's like... It's a little overpainted, like digitally painted and stuff. Yeah. But he does some cool stuff. There's like a part where a cop is like threatening to arrest him, and then like his reaction is like framed by like a close up of handcuffs and stuff like that. So there's some cool stuff like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
I thought that was kind of cool. And the thing they set up at the end is a very much like a like feels like a big
superhero,
like pulpish supervillain thing of like, you know, this is. Like almost like the Joker in like the original Tim Burton Batman movie or something like that, like that kind of thing. So I thought it was a cool setup. I'll definitely read
Me
more
too.
Of it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Cool. Check it out.
Yeah. Between The Shadow and Spider, I think fedora superheroes with guns are coming back.
It's true.
All right. We got two books left.
What you got?
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of these books called Teen Boat.
Let's do
it.
Oh,
my God.
What's the cover quote?
Well, I'm going to say first, this is by Dave Roman, who wrote Astronaut Academy and is the husband of Raina Telgemeier, who wrote Smile.
Yep.
And they've worked together on stuff, too.
Good team.
And I think this is co-written by Justin Green. Or did Justin Green do the art for this?
I think both. I don't know how they split it up.
They did the book together.
Yes. There you go. The two of them worked together.
So the tagline for this book is, "The angst of being a teen, the thrill of being a boat." Do you guys remember the show Turbo Teen?
Yep.
No.
I used to watch that all the time.
It is similar to Turbo Teen in that it is a David Cronenberg-esque story about a boy that's body mutates into a boat.
Yeah. He turns into a boat.
But it's really fun.
Basically.
And for kids.
If that's not enough.
Yeah,
well, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. But well, tell people.
We were talking about this today. It's like either you already think this is hilarious and sounds like a great idea, or you're just like, this is stupid and I won't want it.
Yeah, if you don't want to read Teen Boat, you don't want to read Teen Boat.
No.
But it's hilarious.
But if you do want to read Teen Boat, it's
a bunch of short stories about Teen Boat and his kind of friends in high school. And the drama of him and his like romantic life.
To be clear, his name is Teen Boat. It's not his code name. Yeah, no. He's just Teen Boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to equate it to a superhero thing, but just because it reminded
He's
me of
kind
this
of a superhero.
A little bit. It's like the already high school is this sort of hyper actualized microcosm of like real world drama. Yeah. And then if you take being a boat and add that in there, yeah. You know, it reminds me of like the early Spider-Man issues where it's like about like being in high school and how like being like a superhero just makes it even worse.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what goes on with Teen Boat.
It's so funny, man.
For example, Teen Boat, he has a like this girl who's his best friend and is kind of in love with him, it seems like. But he's in love with this more popular girl named Nina Pinta Santa Maria.
Yep. Transfer student.
Yeah, she's a transfer student from Europe. But she's like in with the in crowd. Yeah. And so in the first story, basically,
he's trying to impress her.
He's trying to impress her. And they, like the head of the football team or whatever, asked Teen Boat if they can have a party on him.
Yep. As a boat.
And so he thinks he's, you know, he's like going to be a popular kid now.
Yeah.
But it ends up that really they just want to sail out into international waters so that they can gamble. Yeah. And then they're attacked by pirates. Yeah. So that's what Teen Boat is.
Yeah. But yeah. There's a gondola that talks and falls in love with him.
Yeah.
There's it's so amazing.
Yeah, it's like just stuff like that.
It's superbly well written. It's got a lot of very funny puns and just like good character moments.
There are more nautical puns than I've ever seen in my entire life. Yeah, I think the first story is called Peer Pressure, spelled P-I-E-R.
Yeah. I was going to say this is a story without peer.
Yeah. but no, it's a lot of fun. You definitely, weirdly, you get invested in like Teen Boat's life. His name is Teen Boat. That's the best part.
So
like
good.
Which implies that when he was a child, his name was still Teen Boat.
Yeah.
Not Child Boat.
Nope. Baby he's boat. Just Teen Boat. Because he's famous. The pirates know the legend of Teen Boat.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's like ye teeny boat.
Yeah. Despite the fact that he's a boat, it's just kind of really well-delivered high school comedy drama stuff.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of like the old romance comics that nobody except me and a few people love. It's like where you just have a ridiculous situation of like, oh, I was in love with this person, but, you know,
I'm a boat.
Exactly.
Just like the old romance comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like it's got a very like kind of Archie feel to it.
Yep. Yeah, good point.
But
much funnier.
But I mean that in like a positive way.
Awesome way, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just so funny. Like you kind of have to read it. It's not even the kind of thing where you can just like read jokes out of it and it's funny.
It's great.
Yeah, I think it was a series of mini comics. Because I've seen them at SPX before.
Yeah, there was a series of mini-comics.
Yeah, but all collected together. I think it's, four, maybe five different little stories?
No, more than that.
Is it more than that?
Yeah.
Well, it's more issues than that, but a couple of the things.
They have some
over.
Good breaks. It's basically, they're all short stories, but they're all building on each other.
Yeah.
The next new adventure.
But it's really like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's hard to talk about Teen Boat.
God, this might be, I don't know what the best thing I read this week.
There's
this
a lot
is pretty
of good
close.
Stuff.
This is the funniest thing I read this week.
That Tatsumi book, you guys, you thought Teen Boat was funnier than that Tatsumi book? You guys are crazy.
No.
You don't think that Tatsumi book
I think
was the best thing
Teen
that
Boat
came out this
was funnier as a whole. Tatsumi had better punch.
Look, we got one more comic, so maybe this is the best comic that came out this week.
What was it?
Exo Manowar #1 by Robert Venditti and Carrie Nord.
I think you got me.
Nope.
It wasn't.
It was close, though.
It was good, though.
The art was awesome.
It was not even close, but it was still good. So, Exo Manowar was an old Valiant series, and this is the first... By the way...
Old, you mean
90s? Teen Boat is awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
Just go read Teen Boat. so old... 90s is old, dude.
It is, I know.
Yeah, 1990 was 22 years ago.
The first issue of this came out almost 20 years ago, or maybe more than 20 years.
Really?
So, Exo Manowar is old. My mom, when I would, like... At some point when I was in my 20s, she was like, I saved all these comics for you. you're going to be rich.
Yeah.
And she was like, here's a 1991 sealed box of Upper Deck cards.
Sweet.
And I was like, sweet, I'm going to buy a house. And then she was like, I got you all the Robin 2. I bought multiple copies of all the covers because you said they were going to be worth money when you were like 12 years old. So I got those with the holograms.
Nice.
Here's a bunch of issues of Exo Manowar.
Nice.
I got some Amalgam comics.
She knew what's up. All those things are coming back.
They are. Is Amalgam coming back?
Nah, I don't know.
Probably not. But anyway, so Exo Manowar was one of the more popular Valiant series. Yeah. And this is the first book of the Valiant relaunch. And it's about Exo Manowar. I never read the beginning of the old series, but this seems like it's pretty similar.
Yeah, we were talking to people today, and I'd read bits and pieces of the old one, but not the first issue. This seems to be exactly the same idea.
It's about a Visigoth who gets armor.
Yep, a barbarian dude who's fighting the Roman legions back in the day, and oh no, aliens have come down, and he is then absconded by the aliens, abscond with him.
And he gets alien armor and becomes Iron Man.
Not in this issue, but in the next issue.
Well, yeah.
But that obviously is the Exo Manowar. It's like sentient Iron Man battle suit.
It's like an exoskeleton.
Correct.
A husk.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
a lot like Exo Squad as well.
So basically, yeah, he's a slave to the aliens in this issue after being captured. Mm-hmm. And he decides he's basically, I mean, not a lot happens in this issue. Like, kind of a lot happens.
A lot happens, but yeah.
But it's all sort of leading up to what's going to happen. So yeah. Basically, he decides, hey, I'm going to steal some weapons from these guys and
kick some butt.
Kick some butt and get home.
Kill all the Romans.
And that's all you really get in the first issue.
Yeah. Yep.
But I thought it was well written. Robert Venditti wrote Surrogates, and he also wrote Homeland Directive, right? Yep. So the guy's a good writer.
Yeah, and Cary Nord is good at drawing barbarians.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And ends up he's good at drawing aliens, too. So, yeah, Cary Nord probably, most famous for drawing Conan. Only famous for drawing Conan.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, I thought this was a good first issue. I mean, if the Valiant books are going to be at this level of quality, then I'm pretty excited about this. I never really read Valiant stuff back in the day.
Me neither. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the rest of them.
Yeah, me too.
It's very solid. Just a solid book.
You know what else I'm looking forward to?
Mm-hmm.
The next episode of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Me too.
We'll be back next week. That's it for this episode, right?
That's good, yeah.
You guys got any parting words for people?
Call into our phone line.
Call into our phone line at whatever number we said earlier.
Something
cast. 539-CAST.
539-CAST. There you go.
Yeah. I'm going to say,
Have a great Cinco de Mayo.
Have a great Cinco de Mayo. Enjoy. Come see us on Free Comic Book Day.
Yep. We'll be there.
And don't read Alan Moore comics if you're going to buy before Watchmen. All right, cool. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye.